I was thinking a moment ago about how really this thing called church could be summed up in a lot of different ways. One issue that's very prominent in God's mind has to do with I will build my church and my Father seeks worshipers. It's called his Father's house that he's consumed with zeal over. But you've made it a den of robbers. It should be a house of prayer. See, and so one thing that you could say about the nature of the church is that it's meant to be a people of prayer and a people of worship. It's the Father's house. The Father seeks worshipers. And in just the most practical of ways, I wonder if this thing called church isn't, amongst other primary things, primarily people that can see and experience Jesus on a daily basis, helping other people around them that are sincere but not really able to find him to do so. You know, there are different levels in this room of people that can see and feel and experience Jesus in terms of a quality of life, a fragrance of a relationship, an aroma of life. You could call it by a lot of different names, a thankful, worshipful person, a prophetic person that can see God, see what's happening in the unseen world. There's a lot of different ways you could describe a person. They have revelation versus someone who maybe doesn't, or maybe previously they didn't, now they do. It's not really an on-off switch, but it's, you know, there certainly is progress to be made in revelation and closeness to Jesus and experiencing his presence through the situations of life and the decisions of life, rather than zoning out and then at some moment of crisis or some moment of ecstasy, just then remembering him as opposed to abiding in him, making our home in him. But in simple terms, I don't know if simplest is appropriate or not, but in simple terms, I wonder if this thing called church isn't really very much about people that do abide in Jesus and make their home in him and are true worshipers, walk with grateful hearts with worship moment by moment, catch him worshiping, you know, just walk up on him, surprise him, and you'll find them worshiping, not thinking about stuff and then trying to remember to be a worshiper. But this is their life, it's their heart, it's their experience, it's the love of their life, it's an infatuation, a marveling at Jesus, a fascination with the Son of God. Yeah, yeah, that was good, Jesus, I like that. A fascination with, you know, these religious words, worship, adore, praise, you know, I mean, those are real words and they're good enough, but you know, when you really love someone, there's a fascination with them. There's a something really intriguing and inspiring about being with them. There, I mean, there's something, when love is cultivated properly, there's something kind of electric about it, something real. You're not apt to just zone out and forget them for huge blocks of time and then remember later on, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be a certain way. There's something captivating, and that is a person that's really walking with God, is they're captivated, fascinated with, they adore him. It's something that's very much on their heart. And so church then could be defined in simple terms as people that experience Jesus helping those that are sincere but don't to become friends of Jesus. That's what Paul meant when he said that he was in the pains of childbirth until Christ was formed in them. They were saved. He already said that in chapter 1 and chapter 3, but they weren't really experiencing Christ, that he wasn't formed in them. He wasn't abiding in them and they and he in him the way that it might have been. And I think of Ephesians chapter 3, where Paul said that I came to bring to you the unsearchable riches of Christ. And I also came to bring to you the administration of the unsearchable riches of Christ. And the end product, he said in verse 10, of the unsearchable riches of Christ implanted in men's hearts, and the administration of the unsearchable riches of Christ, or the working out of the unsearchable riches of Christ, is that now, through the church, the manifold, glorious wisdom of God would be made known even to the principalities and powers. So you can see how all these things are tied together. Now,
in the administration of the unsearchable riches of Christ, or the working out of the riches of Jesus, the fascination with, the adoration of, the infatuation with Jesus, there are things that you could call commands. There's right ways to do things. There's wrong ways to do things. There are things that Jesus commanded not to do, things that he commanded to do. Now, why did he leave this planet in physical form and say, go teach them to obey everything I commanded you? Why did he do that? Because he was trying to build some kind of external empire based on doing certain things certain ways? Uh-uh. Because he knew that in the working out of the unsearchable riches of Christ, that as we stray from his commands, we also stray from his heart. And as we walk in lawlessness, we walk away from the person of Jesus and our ability to see him, to experience him, to abide in him, to be infatuated with him, to marvel at him, to love him from the heart, to be grateful in every circumstance. We forfeit that as we stray from him. How can two walk together unless they be in agreement? So Jesus told us to obey his commands, not because he's an ogre and he's on some kind of ego trip and wants to tell us all the things to do. And we don't, in the church, as Paul said, work out the administration of the unsearchable riches of Christ because it's some kind of hard life and you got to do something some certain way, otherwise people won't be happy with you, whatever, whatever. No, it's about people that are infatuated with Jesus, deeply in love with him, experiencing his presence, like perhaps you may not be, showing you the way to walk with him, that you might also be able to marvel at him, to get the junk out of the way. Remove this from your life. Why? You ogre, you hardcore person? No, it's because you can't see Jesus when that's in your face. I'm not telling you to do this thing this certain way. I'm saying to you, I experience Jesus in a way that you don't. Let's be honest about it. And I also want to say to you, that you can, because he's inviting you to, but as long as you hold on to this, as long as you cling to this independent heart, or this pride, or this selfishness, or this fear of man, or this lust, or this thing, this pride, this miserliness, or this greed, or this, you know, whatever form of worldliness or thing that is other than the person of Jesus that we would cling to, our right to have a temper, our right to be impatient, our right to judge others, our right to whatever. As long as we cling to that, we cannot walk in a friendship and a fellowship with Jesus by Spirit. Incomprehensible. Absolutely impossible. Why the commands? Why the administration of the Word of God? Why did Paul write letter after letter after letter, not with just flowery words about Jesus, but with, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. If you have aught against your brother or he against you, lay your gift down at the altar. Go make it right. I mean, the commands of Jesus, the commands and the teachings of Paul and Peter and John and James and Jude, there's a lot of real practical stuff in there. What's the point? We're trying to create some sort of lifestyle? We're trying to walk with Jesus. You cannot walk away from the teachings and the ways of Jesus and the men that Jesus has hand chosen, the teachings that come by the Spirit, you cannot walk away from those and have an abiding, alive relationship with Jesus.